Chapter 13. Unless Corellia reconsiders its intention to make Centerpoint Station operational again, in contravention of the Senate instruction to all member states to disarm, I have no option but to authorize sanctions against Corellia in the form of traffic interdiction. A naval blockade of Corellia will begin at 0500 tomorrow, unless undertakings are given that Corellia will not rearm. This means that no vessel will be permitted to enter or leave Corellia or any of its industrial orbiters. Chief of State Omis, to the Senate and the Corellian Ambassador. Alliance Fleet Flagship Ocean. Corellian System, 0459 hours. Coruscant Time. Admiral Cha Neothel checked her personal chrono and then looked up at the bridge bulkhead to check the ship's readout. Any signals? Jason hadn't seen Flag Lieutenant Vio's eyes leave the comm console for an hour. If Corellia had backed down, he'd have known.
None, ma'am, said Vio.
I'll take that silence as a get lost, then, she said. Flag, make this to all ships. Interdiction measures are now in force. Corellia is under blockade.
The ships had taken up stations in two distinct zones, one encircling Corellia at 200,000 kilometers, the other between the surface of the planet and the orbiting factory complexes and shipyards where Corellia's industrial heart lay. Corellia was cut off now from outside traffic, and more significantly, from its own factories and power stations. Jason watched the deployment of the ships, from destroyers to fast patrol craft, on the tactical holodisplay that mirrored the larger chart in ops. Nearly 300 small craft now patrolled the inner cordon, ready to stop traffic movement from Corellia's surface to the industrial orbiters. Beyond the orbital ring, destroyers and cruisers waited for the inevitable.
"Anyone laying bets as to who comes to Corellia's aid first?" Jason asked Vio.
He knew that crews couldn't resist that kind of thing. Vio didn't blink.
"Jabib and Rothana are obviously favorites."
"Rothana?" Jabib was always swimming against the tide. Its national sport was intransigence.
"Why Rothana?"
"More to observe than support. Shipyard rivalry thing."
Neothel eyed the holochart and waited. There were a million flights a day through inner Corellian space. The first confrontation would come very soon.
"I was going to ask why the Supreme Commander is out here and not back at Fleet Ops running the show from there,"
Jason said quietly.
"Same reason the head of the Galactic Alliance Guard is on the front line."
Neothel watched the unnaturally frozen chart that should have been showing the transponder icons of thousands of commercial vessels going about their business.
"To be seen."
Ocean hummed and throbbed with the mechanical voices of a thousand systems, feeling almost like a living creature to Jason. It was fascinating to be close to something that had no living substance, and so wasn't transparent to his force senses. He could only influence Ocean using the physical force. He couldn't feel her. He sought Ben in the force, magnifying his own presence to reassure him. The boy was back on Coruscant, safe in the care of Captain Shevu. He'd wanted to accompany Jason, but, as Jason pointed out, he needed his liaison to stay with the guard. Ben was enjoying his newfound status as part of a team that respected his skills and took little persuading. He had shaken off his father's shadow for the first time. Ben now truly believed he was a person in his own right, and not just the Skywalker kid. Jason admired his resilience. He knew what it was to be the child of political celebrities, but being a Solo carried nothing like the stifling expectation of being Luke Skywalker's son.
"Anstai has contact at 500,000 clicks, ma'am,"
the comm officer announced. Neothel didn't move a muscle.
"So Admiral Cheb gets first bite."
Jason could feel Jaina's anxiety, many decks below in the hangar. He knew she couldn't feel his, because he had withdrawn from the force, cloaking himself against detection. For a moment he considered reaching many light-years away, into the Hapes cluster to brush gently against Tenno Ka's presence. But he didn't dare. He tried not to think of her at all. Even thought might put her at risk of discovery if he was careless. Lumia's force skills were still not to be taken for granted, and Tenno Ka and Alana were in a far more dangerous position than he would ever be. It was time to make his impressions on the thousands of officers and ratings in the Interdiction Task Force.
"Permission to put Rogue Squadron on Alert 5, ma'am?" "Carry on, Colonel Sotho."
Reputation spread like wildfire in ships. Jason knew what he wanted his to be, the officer who would never shirk his responsibility, and who would never ask anyone to do what he wouldn't do himself. It made you friends. Jason knew he would need every one of them in the months to come. High-Security Cell Block, Galactic Alliance Guard Headquarters, Coruscant. Ben checked his comlink and saw that he now had 5 calls waiting from his father. When he was with Jason, he felt shielded from the weight of Luke's presence, but now he felt very alone and hunted. He was pretty sure his father could sense where he was. He hated that. He felt he had no privacy. But so far the interference was purely calls, even though Luke must have known that Jason had joined the blockade. Ben concentrated on the matter at hand, which was learning from Captain Chevu. Chevu was head-to-head with another captain, Gearden, having one of those whispered, angry fights that adults had.
"We have rules," said Chevu, "and until the Senate tells me those rules have changed, I live by them."
"Yes, and let's hear you taking that fine moral stance when someone gets assassinated, and we might have stopped it."
"Prisoners get 5 hours break from questioning in 24. You want to do it different? Not on my watch."
The man and woman they had detained in the apartment block were in separate holding cells. The man was a small-time Corellian agent, possibly called Buroy, possibly not, who had been identified from the NRI's database. The woman was probably Kifar, judging by her facial tattoo, and her name was Aelin Habur. Chevu had taken a comlink from her, and it had stored 3 messages since she'd been captured, all from someone called Myrta Gev. Chevu got his way. Gearden stalked off.
"You don't have to stay," said Chevu, tapping the security code into the cell's lock.
Ben was afraid that if he went back to the apartment, his father would find him and confront him, and that he wouldn't have the will to stand up to him. Either that, or they'd fight, and Ben hated having fights.
"I might be able to help."
The doors slid open. Chevu gave him a dubious look.
"This is just a regular interrogation, the way we did it in CSF. If you can mind influence, great. If not, don't worry."
"You know we do that?"
"I don't think it's classified information somehow."
Aelin Habur was sitting at a table, hands on the surface in front of her. She was handcuffed, and her face still bore the marks of the scuffle when she was arrested. The tattoo that surrounded her left eye was unnerving, and she was the hardest-looking woman Ben had ever seen. Wiry and unsmiling, with thin, sinewy forearms that made her look as if she spent her time strangling people.
"Okay, ma'am," said Chevu, sitting down opposite her. "You keep some unsavory company."
"It's not illegal to be a bounty hunter."
"Depends what you're hunting."
"Not illegal to be in the same apartment block as Corellians, either. But I see you're working on that."
"Look, ma'am, this is how we do things." Chevu was quiet and polite. "You give me a good reason why you're holed up with a Corellian agent and carrying some serious hardware, and why you chose to shoot it out with the 967, and I let you leave. Otherwise, I tend to think you're a threat to security.
and in that case you stay here until you rot, if you're lucky.
Habur slid back in her seat, all eyes, and then glanced at Ben.
"What's the kid here for?"
"Training.
You start your thugs young on Coruscant."
Shevu laid Habur's comlink and datapad on the table in front of her. Ben watched, feeling how stressed she was. There was something unfocused about her, as if her hostility and anxiety were directed at something that wasn't in the room.
"You like spacecraft for some reason?"
Habur shrugged.
"Beats walking."
"You got a lot of images of them on your datapad."
Shevu switched on the pad and showed them to her.
"Who did you have under surveillance?"
Habur just stared back at him. Ben craned his neck to get a look at the images on the pad, but it was all just a blur from his angle. Shevu went on, still with that tone of bored patience.
"Just cut the poo-doo and tell me why you're here. If it's just some lowlife you've been sent to vape, I'm too busy to worry about that."
"Don't I get a lawyer?"
"Under the emergency powers I've been granted, no. You get zip."
"You'll be banging my head on the table pretty soon, then."
"Want me to call your friend?"
"I don't have any."
"The one who keeps contacting you."
"Who?"
"Mirta Gev," said Shevu.
Habur's face was completely unmoved, but Ben felt the little flare of strong emotion, fear, dismay, yearning, well up and surround her like an energy field. Shevu reacted to it, too. Ben wondered how non-force users could sense things that well hidden.
"She was recovering some jewelry for me."
And that sounded like the truth. The whole timbre of her voice and the feel of the forest around her changed.
"My mother's necklace."
"Looks like she got it."
Habur said nothing and remained apparently relaxed in the Durasteel seat, even though the muscles in her jaw had started to twitch. Shevu got up and beckoned Ben to follow him outside. The captain closed the doors.
"Go and get Gearden for me. I want to check out this Mirta Gev again. If she's on her way here, I'd like to welcome her to the capital personally, especially if she's armed like Madame in there."
"Are you happy leaving her with Gearden?"
Shevu frowned slightly.
"That's a very grown-up question."
"He feels pretty nasty."
"That's a forced judgment, is it?"
"Yes."
"It's spot on. He's a former New Republic intelligence officer. He's used to different rules than the ones we had to follow as police."
Jason had cobbled together a very mixed bag of men and women for 967 Commando. Ben found some of them frightening, and he could see the differences in cultures, as Shevu called it, among those from the intelligence service, the police, and the military.
"But he wouldn't dare cross me on this."
"Okay."
Shevu was very much in command, even if the two men had the same rank.
"Right away."
Shevu went back into the interrogation room, and Ben went in search of Captain Gearden, trying to walk briskly and not break into a run. He found the man in the barracks gymnasium. The 967, being newly formed, didn't have a proper headquarters yet, and had taken over a Fleet Reserve training center. Gearden, who never looked at ease in his black uniform, stood talking to a couple of sergeants. Somehow it took Ben a few seconds to see the ranks of people behind him, sitting cross-legged on the floor with their hands on top of their heads, fingers meshed. Some of them looked like the kind of people Ben would avoid at all costs, and some looked pretty ordinary. Most were male.
"Wait as tall," said the sergeant. "Nice tip-off, kid."
Ben still scanned the gymnasium, silent except for the heavy sense of people breathing nervously, in the way of someone who felt he ought to recognize one of the prisoners. He did. His gaze jerked to a halt on a blonde boy a few years older than he was. Barrett Tsai sat in the ranks of Corellians arrested during the night, staring at Ben with an expression of utter loathing.
"Yeah, great tip," said Gearden, distracted. "What did you want me for?" Ben knew at that moment that he would never be a child again. He wished more than anything that he could.